This evening, I'm speaking with Severin Kalasuzuki. Good evening, Severin.
Hi.
Hi, thank you very much for taking time out of your Thanksgiving schedule to talk to us here in Guelph.
Oh, no problem.
Well, I'm going to get started. A little bit of background on yourself. Now, I know when you were only 13 years old, you addressed nearly 30,000 people at the Rio Summit on the Environment. And I was just curious, how was that experience for you?
Well, I was actually 12.
Okay, 12, sorry.
And at the time, I was only speaking to the plenary session of the Earth Summit.
Oh, okay.
Even though it was actually broadcast throughout the entire summit building, I didn't seem like I was addressing 30,000 people. I think there was probably 30,000 people present at the summit. But it was an incredible experience for me. It was, for one thing, it was what we had worked for, myself and my group, ECHO, the Environmental Children's Organization, which was basically me and my buddies. It's what we'd been working for over a year and eventually had been able to raise enough money for and then get down to Rio, and then what we'd worked so hard over the 2 weeks during the summit to try to get a platform for, and here we actually did it. We had some time on the plenary. It was something that changed my life after that as well. Ever since, well, my life has been pretty different than it was before. I was invited to speak all over the world after that speech, and I've continued. So it was, yeah, it's a pretty pivotal point in my life, and it's just funny that it happened when I was so young.
How were you received by all the global ambassadors and dignitaries at that summit?
My speech was received incredibly well. I got a standing ovation, which was pretty amazing. Apparently there are only 3 standing ovations at the summit, which was mine and Maurice Strong's and Fidel Castro's. So I was in really good company. And some of the people were crying when they were clapping, and even the doormen tearfully thanked us, myself and my friends, when we left. And so people reacted very emotionally, which was one of our strongest angles while we were there as children, as the Environmental Children's Organization. We were there to remind those politicians of their real duties, of their first duties, besides being politicians, professionals. Their first duties were as parents and as grandparents. And that was the reason that we were there, to remind them of the people who are really going to feel the consequences of their decisions that they made at the summit. So we wanted to remind them to think of their own children when they made their choices.
Well, that sounds like an amazing experience, Severin. I'm curious, have your interests and concerns changed since then? And if so, how have they changed?
Well, they've definitely changed, because now I'm 23, so I'm a lot older. I've had a lot of experiences since then, and I've definitely realized that the world is a lot more complex than I was aware before, of course. And I've been to many, many conferences since. I was at the Kyoto Summit in Kyoto in 1997. I was at Rio+5 in Rio again. I was at Rio+10 just this past August, actually a year ago this August, in Johannesburg. And I've kind of lost my interest in focusing on high-level politicians at these really giant meetings, because I've realized that's not where we're really going to see the change. And definitely in the last 10 years, even though people reacted so emotionally, so strongly to my presentation when I was 12, in the last 10, 11 years, what have they really done to move the environmental movement forward, or the social movement forward? I think it's been a really tough last few years for globalization, for the path of globalization. So I think my focus now is more on what are our personal responsibilities as citizens. That's where the real power is.
From what I understand, I know that you have been very passionate about encouraging, especially young people, to define their values in regards to the future and to act and speak out for the future. I was curious, do you feel that today's youth are in a good position to make a difference in regards to the issues of society and the future?
We have to. I don't think we have a choice. Right now, I think we're unique because we're facing issues that no other generation has ever faced before. And we in North America are very lucky. We're going to be among not among the last to feel the effects of huge environmental issues such as climate change. I mean, we're already starting to feel it already, but we're going to be some of the few people on the planet who are able to mitigate the effects because we are wealthy. And we have a big responsibility because of that. We will be able to deal with the consequences, but what about all the people who can't deal with these problems? This is what our generation has to face. We have to face some pretty serious decisions, and I think we are in a pretty good position right now as people who, well, I'm talking about people, let's say, in the 20s, right, because that's where I am. We can see that the world is a complex place. We can see what's going on politically and globally, and yet we haven't been embedded in the system. We don't have any, we're not in the habit of doing things the old school way, the way that we have to change. And so I think we can really be open to a new way of doing things. We also have everything and nothing to lose. We have everything to lose in that we have our whole lives ahead of us. We will definitely see the wide repercussions and the consequences of our globalization, of our environmental irresponsibility, and we also have nothing to lose in that we are young and we can do things in a new way. So I think we aren't in a good position right now.
What would you suggest to the youth of today to direct them to act and speak out and make a difference for the future in our society?
Well, I'll be talking quite a bit about this, mostly through my own experiences, for sure. I had a lot of really great role models in my life, my parents, some teachers, just individuals in my community. And I think that they're really instrumental in guiding us and leading us. So that's the challenge of the elder generation, really. But to young people out there who want to get involved, I think the first thing to do is ask questions. Ask questions about the world around you. And one first place to start that I often suggest is start asking questions about food. Because food is where your environment becomes part of your body. And food is where each of us as human beings are completely connected now to an international community. The food that we buy is from all over the world, and the ways in which it gets to our doorstep or to our supermarket, those have huge environmental, ecological, and economical repercussions. And I think that being aware of how we are connected to the greater picture, to the rest of the world, is really important. And only through awareness will we be able to start making decisions about how to do things better. And it's the first step to taking personal responsibility. A friend of mine likes to say that we're voting with our dollars, and I absolutely agree with that statement. And for example, when you buy anything from a product to some food, that money isn't just, you know, it doesn't just go to the vendor. It goes towards supporting the economic structures that provide you with what you eat. So you better know what you're supporting. And I think that awareness is the first step.
And in terms of awareness, there's been a lot in the media, you could say, especially with movies and books these days, government watchdogs and whistleblowers and activists by the likes of Michael Moore and Noam Chomsky have had a venue to speak out and sort of reach more people. I was wondering if you've noticed a trend in people's awareness in regards to just all issues in general, social, political, environmental. Like I know, for example, here in Ontario, we just had a provincial election. And in Guelph, the support for the Green Party was up nearly 500%. It went from 700 voters to 3,300 supporters, nearly that many. I'm just wondering if you notice this trend in your travels and with the people that you talk to day to day.
I really am. I really think so. I think that the tide is turning. I think that if you look throughout history in general and just human nature, really, you know, we're always swinging from one side of the pendulum to the other. And I think that we've kind of, well, with the Bush administration and and with many other trends, even in Canada, I think that we're really kind of on one side and we're about to swing back away from the kind of right-wing the right-wing politics that we've seen lately, and I'm excited for it. I think it already is happening. I've noticed it in the conversations that I have with my neighbors, you know, just at our porch parties that we have with my friends, with people who weren't formerly very political at all, and now all of a sudden they're starting to talk with more of, you know, more of an interest in what's going on. I think we really have to make the transition to taking personal responsibility, though. And that makes me really happy to hear that voters are going out and voting for a new group like the Green Party or a different group like the Green Party. And that's what really has to happen. People have to realize that things aren't going to happen unless you or myself, I get involved. And I think that politics is a huge area where that's so true. You know, there's been such a decline in voter turnout and in with general interest in politics, and especially from young people. And I think that, you know, that's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. Of course, we're not going to get very good politicians if we don't believe in politics. So we really have to get involved and take responsibility.
I guess we'll talk a little bit about globalization and touch on sustainable development kind of in the same question here. This lecture that is coming up, it is the Guelph Lecture on Being Canadian. And I was wondering, do you feel that Canada is in a good position right now to meet the challenges of globalization?
Absolutely. We are the product of globalization. And this is one reason why Canadians have every reason to make sure that globalization, this new experiment, goes in the right direction. Because we are products of globalization. Almost all of us are immigrants. In some capacity, our forefathers came from other places in the world, and therefore we can't give up on the rest of the world while we enjoy a strong quality of living here, which we are. And I think that most Canadians are obviously connected in a greater way to the rest of the world. So we definitely are globalized. And it comes back to responsibility and realizing that and recognizing that we are we enjoy, you know, top quality of life globally, and yet we are also one of the highest consumers and polluters of global resources in the world per capita, and we really have to come to terms with that. And I believe that we really could be world leaders in terms of sustainable development, sustainable innovations. And I think Canada has so much potential in terms of that, because I think we're a relatively left leaning country, if I can make that generalization. We have a very high quality lifestyle, and we're quite educated, and we are global. So these factors, I think, really they have made us a very conscious and peacekeeping nation, and I think that we can take it further.
When you come to Guelph on November 1st, what will your lecture be about?
Well, they'll be about most of the topics that we're talking about right now, I think. I talk a lot about my own personal experiences, because that's pretty much all I really have authority to speak about. I think I'm probably going to talk about, yes, this aspect of multiculturalism and what it does mean to be a Canadian, and how we are innately connected to the larger globe, and what that means in terms of responsibility. And I think that it's not an ominous task. It's not, you know, a heavy burden on our shoulders. I think it could be an incredible opportunity for us to really embrace our role as role models, because we are undoubtedly, definitely, the developing nations look up to the first world, and that's who we are, and we have to recognize and realize that responsibility.
Anybody that's interested, if they want to learn more and hear more about your ideas and what you are supporting, other than going to the Guelph Lecture, I know you have a web-based effort that you started called Skyfish. Is there anything else or anywhere else people can find out about what you're up to these days?
I think that would be the best site, the Skyfish Project. The website address is skyfishproject.org. And yeah, that would be good. We're a web-based discussion group and think tank. There's been lots of media. I've had a little media blip, my 15 minutes in the last few months, so there might be several articles, but come check us out first before you listen to anyone else.
Thank you very much, Severn, for sharing some of your ideas with the people here in Guelph and surrounding area. We look forward to seeing you here in Guelph on November the 1st at the River Run Center, part of the Guelph Lecture that is going to be taking place that day. So, yes, thanks again for calling in, Severn. And
thanks, Taylor.
I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving and a great time with you and all your friends.
Thank you.
No
Same
problem.
To you.
We were just speaking with Severn Collis-Suzuki, who will be in Guelph November 1st at the River Run Center, speaking at the Guelph Lecture on Being Canadian. And I'm now speaking with Dr. Joy Roberts, one of the organizers of the event. Good evening, Joy.
Good evening, Taylor. It's nice to hear from you.
Well, nice to hear from you, too. I guess we'll get started. Why are you and the other organizers putting on the Guelph Lecture on Being Canadian, and what do you wish to achieve from it?
Well, I think a number of years ago, when Doug McMullen, my partner, and I retired relatively early, one of the things we wanted to do was to spend a little more time thinking about societal issues and reading a bit more about some of the decisions that were made and the things that happened to create the kind of society we live in right now. Around that time, the Cold War also ended, and I think we, like many others, were really hopeful for the kinds of changes that were going to occur. It seemed maybe there was a movement toward more international cooperation and peace. And I think that that hasn't happened to the degree that we would all like. Instead, there have been many alarming events taking place, and those events are taking place on top of some of the old problems that desperately needed attention even then. And we're not claiming that this lecture is sort of a response to those questions, but what we are suggesting is that Canada, thanks to some quiet leadership, some good decisions made in the past, and some luck, finds itself in a very fortunate position, unnoticed by many of us. We think Canada has moved on to a world stage, and it's now representing, it's a role model for what society should look like in the 21st century. For example, our immigration policies, our multicultural fabric, the sort of tolerance we have, our social safety net. We've had a number of Canadians have taken a leadership role in human rights, and it's starting to really catch the attention of people as models for other countries. And that's what we think, and we'd like to hear what other people think and to promote a dialogue. We're not offering answers, of course, but we are trying to engage people in helping them to ask the right questions and to be involved. Our first lecture particularly wants to encourage young people to ask questions and to be involved. I think we're all hearing that young people are disenfranchised, they're bored, they're disillusioned with our politicians and even our institutions. However, if they respond with apathy, I think important decisions will simply get made without their input. So there are elements of our society that might be happy to have that happen. They might be happy to see young people unengaged. But we think it's dangerous for the kind of Canada that we'd like to see built. And we think that there's also a real opportunity for young people to have a greater say in society. So we asked Severn to come and talk as our first speaker. She's a young person with an unusual amount of experience for her age. And we want her to talk about her views on Canada's role. She's participated in international efforts, many of them with the United Nations. And we thought that she might have some really interesting perspectives to share.
Who is the group behind the lecture?
The group is growing larger as we get started and as we meet more people. As I mentioned, Doug and I had spent some time at the beginning reading and talking about these issues. We also had some other friends, Michael Barnstein and Louise McCallum, who were also recently retired at the time, and they were putting their efforts into supporting the arts in order to add that perspective to society. We got talking about cooperating on a venture like this, And I think the next main person we talked to was Tishare Singh. He lives in Guelph. He's a criminal lawyer and journalist. And we knew about his work in human rights. We spoke with him. And we also recruited Sandy Gallant, who is a retired high school principal, who's really been very helpful in getting the word out to some senior high school students as well. So that group sort of got started at the beginning, and it's been growing since then as people hear about it and think about ways that they can help. And we certainly, we're all volunteers. We have a not-for-profit status pending, and we're interested in certainly talking to anyone else who might also be interested.
Great. I guess next question. Aside from Severin doing a lecture at the Guelph Lecture on Being Canadian, what else can people expect to see that evening at the River Run Center?
Well, it's going to be quite exciting. We have Tom King. You may know Tom because he one of his many roles is as a professor in the English department at the University of Guelph. He's also been chosen as this year's Massey Lecturer, and you might have heard him on CBC Radio. He wrote and acted in The Dead Dog Cafe, for example. He's doing an original comedy skit or a short story. And we also have an incredibly energetic dance performance by the Young Turban Professionals. They're a Sikh-Canadian dance group, and they've got a couple of surprises up their sleeves, but it's thoroughly entertaining and enjoyable. So all of that happens, and then there'll be a reception afterwards that Kanar Jewelry has agreed to sponsor. So it'll be a full evening, and it'll give people a chance to discuss some ideas after the lecture as well.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a very informative, intriguing, as well as an exciting evening at the River Run Center on November 1st. If anybody is interested in going, tickets are available by calling the River Run Center box office at 763-3000, that's 763-3000, or toll-free at 1-877-520-2408. You can also get tickets online by going to the River Run Center website at www.riverrun.guelph.on.ca. And if you're downtown, you can also get tickets from the Bookshelf and Giardino's Hair Salon, which are both located on Quebec Street. And ticket prices are $20 for regular admission, $15 for university and college students, and $10 for students under 18 years old. Well, thank you very much, Joy, for sharing that information with us and giving us a little insight as to what's going to be happening this year at the Guelph Lecture on Being Canadian.
You're most welcome. Thank you for your interest.
All right. We look forward to seeing you November 1st at the River Run Center, Joy.
Thanks, Taylor.
All right. Take care.
Good night.